J'allume ma dernière cigarette, j'débouche ma dernière bière tablette. J'fais jamais de joke avec les tapettes, mais j'l'avoue, j'ris des gros. J'vais me mettre fortin à gauche, l'enjeu à droite. Est-ce que c'est bon de passer à la palette? Si j'me ramasse tout seul, bande, j'te jure, va te la griser, top net. Car je ne suis plus Sylvain Séguin, moi je suis Taylor Woodchuck. Car je ne suis plus Sylvain Séguin, moi je suis Taylor Woodchuck.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. That song you heard off the top is Dale Hawerchuk, written by Les Dale Hawerchuk, a great Quebec band that basically has a great story about Dale Hawerchuk, which we'll talk about a little bit later. Tonight, as you may guess, tonight's show isn't about meeting someone whose hockey story needs to be told. Instead, tonight we tell a story basically about a guy who made Winnipeg bigger than what it was thanks to its hockey prowess. While we in Winnipeg often point to the signing of Bobby Hull as our ticket into the big-time professional sports world, there's no doubt that Dale Hawerchuk's presence on the Jets put Winnipeg on the map as a true NHL city. He was the first NHL superstar that we could boast. He was a goal scorer, playmaker, the guy who came through when the Jets needed hero, and he often dazzled us with his speed, skill, and vision. Dale Hawerchuk unfortunately passed away at the age of 57 from stomach cancer on Tuesday. The former Jets captain had successfully undergone chemotherapy only to have the cancer return. Unfortunately, he lost the second battle with the disease, and we're here tonight to mourn his loss. Tonight on The Hockey Show, I'm going to play some clips of him at his best. I have highlights of him scoring goals, interviews with various outlets, and some stats and facts about Dale Hawerchuk that I want you to hear as we do an hour-long tribute to the man who best wore number 10 in the city of Winnipeg and who brought this city into a new era of highlight reel goals, awe-inspiring moments, and breathtaking displays of greatness. Tonight's show is all about the man we call Ducky. I want to start with a recent interview that Dale Hawerchuk did with TSN's James Duthie. I spoke to James a little bit earlier, and he did give me permission to use this clip. I want to make sure that he gets proper recognition for this, because I think this interview is fantastic that he did with Dale Hawerchuk. So here is James Duthie interviewing Dale Hawerchuk back on May 9th, 2020, about his battle with cancer and some of the highlights in his career.
Dale, first and foremost, we are thrilled that you're here to talk hockey today after going through your battle with stomach cancer. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good, you know, after doing chemo in the fall and then having surgery right after the new year and then chemo again this spring. My last chemo was about 3 weeks ago. So, overall, I feel like I'm getting stronger every day.
I know you were reluctant to ring the bell of hope after your last round of chemo April 13th because you were sensitive to all the coronavirus patients there. But in the end, you did do it. And were you happy to? Did it feel great?
Yeah, you know, I think not only for me, but I mean, even for other people, because there's lots of people sitting in there, you know, getting their chemos injected into them. And whenever you hear the bell of hope, you know, somebody's finished it and moving on in the right direction, it seems. So it gives them hope, too. So that was important for me to do it for them as well, because, you know, I've been in there when I've heard it before and I'm thinking, yeah, it'd be nice one day, but just to get it finished. But yeah, for sure, with the coronavirus, you know, you want to get in and out of there. We're pretty vulnerable, us patients that are in the chemotherapy. So, but the nurses really wanted me to do it, and they were great. And I was glad I could do it for everybody there. And, you know, it's been a long battle.
Well, let's do something you love, and that's talk hockey. TSN is airing all three games of the 87 Canada Cup. You played a critical role, particularly in game three in Canada's comeback. What is your biggest memory of that series and that game?
I really think the 87 Canada Cup really changed the game of hockey, especially in the NHL. I think you especially in that three-game series, because you saw two teams that were loaded with talent, but they were so loaded that you couldn't extend your shifts, because if you got caught tired out there, you were going to get burnt. And I think it really, really awoke everybody that, hey, we're just going 30, 40 seconds hard here, full throttle. And, you know, it's amazing when the dust settled, every game was 6-5, one in overtime, one in double overtime, one in the last minute. I mean, I didn't write a better script than that. But, two pretty talented teams, and I think both teams are pretty exhausted by the end.
You were a six-time 100-point guy with the Winnipeg Jets, and yet asked to play a grinder role for Canada, but a critical assist and goal in that final game. Describe those two plays which brought Canada back to even things up.
Well, the Brent Sutter's goal was a great shot by him. I mean, I made the pass from behind the net, but, you know, Brent, I was all over the place. I was playing a little bit of center, played the wing with Sutter, and then I think Rick Tocchet was there. And Rick Tocchet had a hell of a game because he was hurting pretty good before, you know, and a lot of guys played injured. You know, it's pretty funny because there was a lot of guys that, you know, probably wouldn't have played, but it was such a big game. And Rick, you know, he was hobbling around, and he was instrumental, especially in that first period. Like, I remember one time I went to hit one of the Russians, and I missed him, and I hit my shoulder on the dasher board, and it was like a stinger, and I couldn't feel my arm, and my stick was kind of falling out of my hand. So I went to the bench to change to get somebody healthy out there, and the trainer saw me, and he come running over, and he's talking to me, and before you know it, Keenan's in my other ear, and he's like, "Are you going to milk that thing all night, or are you going to be ready next shift?" So it was kind of like, you know, it was all hands on deck. But, you know, playing with Brent and Rick, you know, they're such go-getters, and we really grinded it out for a few shifts, and we felt like something was coming, and then, you know, I was able to make a play from behind the net to Brent, and he scored a beauty top shelf, and then on my goal, it was just kind of a wrap around and just staying with it. And I can't remember who it was, but it might have been Sutter sort of interfered with one of the Russians so that I could get around the net. And, you know, I just kept jamming away and it went in. And, of course, because we had such a poor start to that game. It was like it was an uphill battle. And then we got the lead, and then they were able to tie it up and force us to try and win it in the last minute.
Yeah, it's kind of similar to game one that way, where you fell behind and had to come back, except lost game one and win that one. You were a surprising choice to some to take that final face off in your own end. Mike Keenan just said you were having a good night. You just felt good about it, even though you had a lot of choices. What were you thinking when that puck was dropped?
Well, a couple things. Even when I went to training camp, I don't think they really had me penciled in. I remember the late Pat Burns coming up to me, and I love Pat. Pat was great. He was a real good communicator with us. And he's like, "Hey, Howie, just keep playing the way you are." He says, "You know, we really didn't have you penciled in, but the way your training camp is, there's no way we can keep you off out of this lineup." And they did end up keeping me. But going out for that last faceoff, he's like, "You just, you know, just go get mess." And so you're going out there with Gretzky and Lemieux. And I said to Gretz, I said, "You want to take the faceoff?" He said, "There's not a chance." And then I go to Mario, and he's kind of got that French accent. And he's like, "Hey, Ducky, that's on my wrong side. I can't take that." So I said, "Well, Mario, I'm tying him up," so which means for him to come in and pick up the loose puck. But that's how that faceoff transpired. And, of course, they went down and did their magic the way they did the whole series. And I'll tell you what, watching those two play, like as many points as they had and goals they scored, they probably missed you know, twice as much. They were that close all the time. But they were, you know, people enjoyed watching them. But, I mean, we had great seats on our bench watching those two.
And what were you thinking as they're carrying the puck up the ice after Mario chips it off the boards?
Well, there was only one guy that could really catch him. I think it was Bykov, and I kind of hooked him up a little bit.
Oh, you kind of did.
Yeah. I mean, he really dove it, though. But, I mean, if you watch that game, I mean, geez, you just have to watch some of these playoff classics and the hooking and holding. Like, it's crazy hockey back then. People forget, right? Like, you could do that sort of thing. You were always allowed to kind of hook for one stride. If you started water skiing, well, then you took a chance of getting a penalty. But
were you worried that one was going to be called a penalty such a crucial moment?
I really was, because it was Coho. Coho was reffing, I believe, right? Kaharsky?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was on it all night, because there was a few dives out there. He was really on it. He did a good job, I thought. And, you know, that was a case where, I mean, I hooked him a little bit, and then he did a spinorama falling down, right? Like, I mean, he looked like he was training for the Olympic figure skating. So Coho was right on that all game. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, back then the refs would be like, if the guy hooked you or whatever and he didn't think it was enough, he'd, you know, the ref, you could hear the ref saying, no, keep going, you know what I mean? So they were really communicating. But that one there, I really didn't think, I would have been surprised if he called it. But I think more than anything, the way he dove really made the refs say, forget it. But, I mean, it wasn't that hard a hook. I mean, it might look it the way he dove, but
right.
It was all I was trying to do was just break him half a stride so he couldn't quite catch Mario.
Yeah, a critical little play, though, to give Mario that extra bit of room.
Yeah, maybe if he's tighter, maybe he slides it to Murph, but maybe not. Like Mario says, we'll never know.
Do you keep anything, a souvenir, a keepsake from that tournament?
You know what? I have one good photo. My grandmother, who was alive at the time, she was in a wheelchair since she was 50. And she used to always get parked right behind one of the nets, right? And she befriended one of the photographers there, and he ended up sending her a picture of me holding the Canada Cup. So I actually, that's quite a popular picture with me. I don't know if I have it here. Yeah, I do actually. Yeah, I don't know if you can see that.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, he had the lens where he could see the picture or whatever, I guess. And she said, oh, you got to send me that, right? So she was notorious for getting her way right into behind the opposition's net. She knew not to go to our end and never see me.
That's a great photo. And just the expression of your face. I mean, you won another Canada Cup in 1991, and there was some great international tournaments before 87. But do you think has there ever been another tournament, another series played at the level of those three games?
No. I mean, that was, for a three-game series, that was incredible. And I'll tell you, one other series that was pretty incredible was the Rendezvous, which was in 87 in Quebec City. And, you know, that was a two-game series, and that was really competitive, you know. That was our all-star break. And let me tell you, there was no break that year. That kind of set up for what was going to happen in the Canada Cup. It was almost a tune-up. And so we got a little bit of a feel for them. But I they had a lot of different guys in that lineup than they did when they came in into the Canada Cup.
Well, listen, thanks so much for sharing the stories. It's fantastic to watch that series again. I hope all of Canada is enjoying it. And it's great to see you doing well, my friend.
All right. Thanks, James. Appreciate it. Everybody stay safe out there. We'll get through this.
Thank you, Dale.
I want to thank James Duthie for allowing us to use that interview that he did with Dale Hawerchuk back in May. Just an outstanding interview. And I want to thank James again for letting us use that in its entirety, excuse me. There's a lot that people may not know about Wayne Gretzky and Dale Hawerchuk just in terms of how good they were. Obviously we know how great Gretzky was, and just, you know, numbers alone are ridiculous in some cases, but I don't know if people are aware just how good Dale Hawerchuk was when it came. I mean, granted, he didn't have the same supporting cast as a Wayne Gretzky. I mean, there was no Messier, no Coffey, that kind of stuff. I mean, there were some good players around Dale Hawerchuk when he played here in Winnipeg, but in terms of NHL point leaders from 1981 until 1994, Gretzky's above and beyond. 2,157 points. Like, we know that he's all over the place. Hawerchuk, though, was second in points during that time, from 1981 till 1994. You think about the other names that have played during that time, guys like, again, Messier, guys like Mario Lemieux, guys like Steve Yzerman, are all in that era. Dale Hawerchuk is second only to Gretzky in that era, 1981 to 1994, 1,298 points. Coffey had 1,246, excuse me. Messier had 1,220. Mario Lemieux had 1,211 points. Hawerchuk, should also be noted, won the 1981-82 Calder Trophy as well. So when you look at that and you go, man, like he may have been legitimately the second best player in the NHL for a long time. There's no doubt about that. Gretzky, leave that argument alone. Heads and shoulders above everybody else in terms of points. Wayne Gretzky was the best player in the 1980s. But Dale Hawerchuk likely was the second best player to have ever played the game during that era. And he's second in points behind Wayne Gretzky. I think that's phenomenal in terms of of what Dale Hawerchuk did in this city. And in saying that, I do have a clip of his 50th goal that he scored in 1985, the one of the few times that he hit 50 goals. Again, he had 40 goals seven of his first eight seasons. Name me any other player that's done that, other than maybe a Wayne Gretzky. Not many, that's for sure. But here is his 50th goal in 1985 that he scored against the Chicago Blackhawks. Dale Hawerchuk absolutely making it look way too easy in this clip. Here it is.
Steve Larmer moving to the deep slot. Feeds Ben Wilson. Wilson the drive. He missed the net. It bounces to center. The race is on. Hawerchuk. He's going to get there first. Hawerchuk moving right in. A shot. He scores. A brilliant play by Dale Hawerchuk. 1-0 Winnipeg.
What a play by Hawerchuk to get his body between the puck and Steve Larmer. And then on a spinorama on the backhand, he beats Gorodetsky to score his 50th goal of the year. A superb individual effort.
Some may know that Dale Hawerchuk was selected first overall by the Winnipeg Jets in 1981 as part of the NHL entry draft after the Jets struggled hard in 1982 to put anything together in terms of wins. So Dale Hawerchuk was the player that they went after first overall. I would say it was a pretty good selection. But you have to wonder how a player like Dale Hawerchuk, who won two Memorial Cups with the Cornwall Royals, who had won throughout his entire career, would feel, if he would feel any pressure coming into Winnipeg to maybe recreate that winning atmosphere, that winning attitude that's needed after the Jets have struggled so hard the year before. Here is an interview that Dale did with Dave Hodge on Hockey Night in Canada way back in 1981 when they were talking about his early part of the career anyway. This happened on October 31st, Halloween, in 1981.
Well, Dale Hawerchuk signed his first NHL contract this summer at Portage in Maine in Winnipeg, and Gus Spadaly also happens to be his agent. Predicted you'd score 100 points in your rookie season. Those thoughts in your head, too?
I don't really set any goals. Gussie always likes to set a few for us, and I just go game by game, and I'll take it from there.
You played on two straight Memorial Cup champions, so you're used to winning. Did it bother you at all that maybe you wouldn't win quite as much in your first NHL season with a team that finished last a year ago?
Oh, I don't think so. I've been brought up with a winning attitude. I've been pretty lucky through my minor hockey, and then two Memorial Cups. I'm used to winning, but I think we've got a lot of young guys in Winnipeg, and we want to win, and losing isn't on our mind, so I think if we keep that winning attitude, we could have a successful season.
Well, there's every evidence that you will so far. Dale, last year David Babich was the top draft pick of the Jets and was called the franchise, and a lot of people thought that he would have to lead the whole club on his back. And I'm sure you heard some of the same things. That bother you, and you try to get people to think differently?
No, it doesn't really bother me too much. I think the only kind of pressure that bothers you is personal pressure you put on yourself, and I don't do that. I think for the Winnipeg Jets to do well, it's going to be a team effort. Dale Hawerchuk's not going to lead them to the Stanley Cup. It's going to be a full team Winnipeg effort.
How do you feel the team has progressed thus far, realizing that you're almost 2 months ahead of the Jets' pace of last year? Are you happy with the way the club is playing? And you?
Yeah, I've been pretty pleased. We got off to a fairly good start. I think we could have even got off to a better start. And, that's what's good about our team. We're not content with what we're at. And, we're going to strive for the top ability we can get to, and we're not satisfied at all.
A lot of people pulling for you to win the Calder Trophy, not just because you were born here, but there's another Stastny in the league, his first year in the league. Is that on your mind, to win the Calder Trophy for Canadians or for yourself?
Oh, it'd be great to win the Calder Trophy, but I think the first and foremost thing on my mind right now is to contribute to the team, and if the team's successful, then usually everybody else on the team's successful.
Thank you, Dale. Good luck.
Thanks.
Dale Hawerchuk of the Jets will return with more on This Week in the NHL in just a moment.
Did Dale Hawerchuk originate the standard hockey answer to any hockey question? He might have, but got to say, good interview by Dave Hodge, and certainly some good answers by Dale Hawerchuk. And that humbleness, that blue-collar sort of, we're going to get to it, we're going to work hard, we're going to do our best, really endeared him to Winnipeg fans. But again, I don't think that we know just how good he was. I know we talk about, he's Ducky and he's one of the greatest and all that, but I don't know if people are aware just how good he was. Let's go through some of the individual numbers and records that he still holds. Dale Hawerchuk is still the only Jet to finish second in Hart Trophy voting. As he finished second to Wayne Gretzky in 1984-85 in that season where we heard he score his 50th goal in the previous highlight. Dale Hawerchuk, again, was one of the best, like we said, during that era, and finishing second in Hart Trophy voting to Wayne Gretzky is certainly nothing to be ashamed of. He's the only Jet, only Coyote in history to finish that high in terms of the voting. Dale Hawerchuk had 3 6-point games for the Winnipeg Jets. He's the only Jet in history to have multiple 6-point games with the Jets. No other player in Jets or Coyotes history has more than one. He had 4 regular season overtime goals, but did not score an overtime goal in the playoffs, which I thought was surprising considering some of the teams he played on. Certainly going to the playoffs with Buffalo and with Philadelphia, with St. Louis, you would think that there might have been one or two in there, but no, Dale Hawerchuk never had one, which was, again, I was surprised by that. He had 6 100-point seasons, including 5 in a row from 83-84 through to 87-88. There have been just 2 other 100-point seasons in the history of the Jets and the Coyotes, so it shows you just how high and just how much on another level he was compared to some of his teammates. He had 7 seasons in which he scored 40 goals, with each coming in his first 8 seasons with the Jets. He led the Jets in scoring for 9 seasons. He finished first in each of his 9 seasons with Winnipeg from 81-82 through to 89-90, and he never scored less than 81 points in any of those seasons, which again just goes to show you how good he was considering some of the struggles that the Jets teams had during that time. The 1980s were a bit of a crazy time as well, as the best offensive players often were out killing penalties, and that meant that Dale Hawerchuk saw a lot of time on the penalty kill, really benefiting the Winnipeg Jets, as he scored 12 career shorthanded goals, 11 with the Winnipeg Jets, and he had 1 with the Buffalo Sabres. The one he scored with Buffalo came on January 12, 1994. The team he did it against, none other than the Winnipeg Jets. Hawerchuk had 15 NHL hat tricks, all during the regular season. The first 12 came with the Jets, and that's still a team record today. The next 2 came with Buffalo, and the last one came with the Philadelphia Flyers on November 21st, 1996. Hawerchuk still holds the record for Jets Coyotes history for consecutive games with at least 1 point, and he did that from February 23rd to April 7th, 1985. That's the longest streak in Coyotes and or Jets history. Hawerchuk scored an incredible 33 points, 17 goals and 16 points, during that 18-game consecutive point streak. Hawerchuk, in 1981-82, won the Calder Trophy, as mentioned, and he did it with 103 points that season. But what's more remarkable is that he was the first 18-year-old to do so when he won the Calder Trophy at the age of 18 years, 354 days, and he also became the first 18-year-old to score at least 100 points in a season. Sidney Crosby of the Pittsburgh Penguins is the only other player to do so, and Crosby did it at 18 years, 253 days. An amazing feat by Dale Hawerchuk. That 84-85 season also saw Hawerchuk put up the highest point total of his career with 130. He had 53 goals that season, was named an NHL second team All-Star in 84-85. Hawerchuk also holds the longest games played streak in Jets Coyote history, and that's at 475. He played 475 consecutive games from December 19th, 1982 through to December 10th, 1988. It's never a bad thing for the Jets to have their superstar on the ice for 6 straight seasons, and certainly Dale Hawerchuk helped the Winnipeg Jets over that time become much better and certainly remain in the hunt for playoff spots, not to mention a chance at the Stanley Cup. There is one record, though, that still stands today that Dale Hawerchuk set in his time with the Winnipeg Jets. We're going to hear that record right now, thanks to the NHL producing a memories clip of this record. Here is Dale Hawerchuk's record that still stands as an NHL record today.
Dale Hawerchuk was the first overall pick in the 1981 NHL entry draft. Selected by the Winnipeg Jets, he proved to be an offensive star, winning the Calder Trophy his rookie year. But it was his third season when he made a lasting impact on the NHL record book. On March 6, 1984, on the road against the Los Angeles Kings, Hawerchuk set an NHL record as he tallied 5 assists in 1 period, a record that still stands today. The Jets defeated the Kings 7-3 thanks to a memorable period from their future captain.
Pretty cool, right? Dale Hawerchuk still holding the NHL record today for most assists in one period with five, as he set up five different goals, five different tallies in that game against the Los Angeles Kings. Ironically, the team that he victimized the most in his career were the Los Angeles Kings. He had 117 points, the most against any NHL team in his career. He scored 38 goals and 79 assists in 81 games against Los Angeles through his illustrious career. And we know Dale Hawerchuk played for a number of great teams over the years. He played in Buffalo, he played in St. Louis, he played in Philadelphia. We'll get to those in a second, but the band off the top, I said I would talk a little bit about this band a little bit. Les Dale Hawerchuk is a Quebec-based band, a good Canadian band, who basically sought out Dale Hawerchuk to use his name as their band name. Ian Chance were called on Twitter yesterday that basically the Hall of Famer, Dale Hawerchuk, had only one condition for the band in terms of them using his name, and that was they, quote, stay out of jail, unquote, which is kind of a cool little fact about Les Dale Hawerchuk and certainly how he was okay with the band using his name. Now, regarding the different moves throughout his career and off the Winnipeg Jets in terms of where he went to after this, for those that don't remember, he was dealt at draft day in 1990. There was a lot of pieces that moved that day, a lot of stuff that was moving around that day for the Winnipeg Jets as they were looking to change the way this team was maybe built a little bit, the way this team was maybe sort of set up a little bit. Dale Hawerchuk was one of those, was the player that they needed to deal, they felt, in order to change the course of this team. I'm going to use a clip from the Unsung Blues history, which you can find on YouTube, that talks about what the trade involved and how the pieces moved around. Again, a lot of moving pieces. We'll hear about, you know, Keith Tkachuk, Phil Housley, and Dale Hawerchuk all in this next little clip as to how Dale Hawerchuk became a Buffalo Sabre.
He would find himself heading to Buffalo in a blockbuster trade in 1990. During the draft, he was sent with a first-rounder that became Sabres icon Brad May in exchange for Scott Arniel, Jeff Parker, and two future St. Louis Blues and Phil Housley, and a first-round pick 5 picks later, which became Keith Tkachuk.
In Buffalo, Dale Hawerchuk would land on the line with Alexander Mogilny and Yuri Himalev and become one of the most dangerous lines in the NHL. It would be in the 1992-93 season in which Alexander Mogilny would score 76 goals on a 127-point season, in which Dale Hawerchuk played 81 games, scored 16 goals, but recorded 80 assists for a 96-point season. An outstanding year for Dale Hawerchuk in the Buffalo Sabres colors. He wasn't as great as he was in Winnipeg in terms of his scoring prowess, but Dale Hawerchuk would show up when needed most, especially in the playoffs for the Buffalo Sabres, as they were always a thorn in the side of most Adams Division teams. Here's a clip of the very first goal of the season in 1995, in which those three players, Yuri Himalev, Alexander Mogilny, and Dale Hawerchuk, show off the amazing chemistry that they did have in scoring a beauty on the New York Rangers.
Around the boards to Brian Noonan. Noonan took the check, got knocked down, played up to the point, took a ball with Mogilny. Mogilny trying to go around him. Good play to tip it back in by Hawerchuk. Himalev to Hawerchuk. He scores! This game's tied at one! Oh, mammy, that was middle of the season. Passing right there.
Incredible play. Not only by Mogilny, Gary, but one of the most beautiful little touch passes you will ever see. And Dale Hawerchuk is the man that made it. Gosh. But make no mistake about it, it was Mogilny's speed that got this thing rolling. Watch the puck go out, and Jeff Bookaboom, big man, number 23 in white, well, he was beaten to the puck, and that's where Hawerchuk just tipped it to Yuri Himalev back. Hey, that's a practice goal. These guys are sharp. You know, Gary, the Sabres told us this morning they weren't lying. They said, you know what? We have been sharp. The passing has been good. We think we're in shape. They look good there.
I also mentioned that Dale Hawerchuk had an impact on the playoffs for the Buffalo Sabres, and perhaps that was no greater than in 1993 when the 109-point Adams Division champion Boston Bruins faced off against the 86-point fourth-place Buffalo Sabres in the 1993 Stanley Cup playoffs. That series, you may recall, is a pretty big series in which we had the Rick Jenneret May Day call in Game 4 on May's overtime goal to eliminate the Bruins from the playoffs, as the Buffalo Sabres swept the Bruins out of the playoffs that year. Perhaps what needs to be pointed out, though, was that Dale Hawerchuk was all over the score sheets in those games. He certainly was setting up goals, and he had a couple of big goals as well. Here is one of those big goals. This would be the fourth goal in a 4-0 victory in Boston by the Buffalo Sabres in Game 2, Dale Hawerchuk scoring that fourth goal for the Sabres.
Up to Hawerchuk. Hawerchuk tried to get it to Audet. It bounced away from him. Well, here's Audet stealing it away in the corner again. He bumps in there with Don Sweeney. Himelev stepped into Poulin, kept in by Buffalo, across to Carney. Carney takes a shot, fired it wide. The rebound! They score! Phil Hawerchuk hammers home the rebound, and the power play goal gives Buffalo a 4-0 lead.
Dale Hawerchuk, the right place at the right time, as Keith Carney gets the puck at the blue line, shoots it towards the net. It misses the net, bounces off the backboard, and comes out. Blue is on the other side of the net as Hawerchuk has the whole net to shoot at. And that's all he does is just redirects the puck up past into an open net, I should say. And the Sabres now a comfortable 4-0 lead with just a bit over five minutes left in this third period.
And the folks are filing in great numbers now out of the Boston Garden, the sellout crowd. With Buffalo in front by 4.
Despite playing good hockey in Buffalo, Dale Hawerchuk was no closer to a Stanley Cup than he had been with Winnipeg. Every year there seemed to be a team that just stood in their way that they couldn't get by. In saying that, he became a free agent after 5 years with the Buffalo Sabres and decided to explore other options, especially one that sounded fairly lucrative and potentially very interesting depending on how you viewed it. I'll go back to the Blues unsung history for this next move in Dale Hawerchuk's career.
After 5 seasons in Buffalo, Hawerchuk earned another acclaim, being the first NHL player to reach 1,000 career games before the age of 31. But as he crossed the other side of 31, he became a free agent. The Blues, now led at this time by Mike Keenan, were on a crusade to sign older veteran stars in an attempt to make a Stanley Cup run. Other oldie but goodies over the age of 30 on the 95-96 Blues team include Glenn Anderson, Jeff Courtnall, who was 33 by now, Grant Fuhr, Greg Gilbert, Charlie Huddy, Basil McRae, Esa Tikkanen, and this Wayne Gretzky guy you may have heard of once or twice. Getting a star forward who already had over 1,300 points by this stage of his career surely meant he was going to make a big impact, right? Not exactly. He wasn't bad, per se, but his 13 goals and 28 assists in 66 games was not the usual pace for Hawerchuk, who usually was good for a point per game plus. For one reason or another, it just didn't work out for Dale in St. Louis. One reason may be that he was in the twilight of his career at this point and only had 1 year left in it. Another reason? Mike Keenan. It's a story that might just embody Keenan's entire tenure with the Blues. To put it shortly, Mike Keenan doesn't care about your grandma. At all. Hawerchuk was slated to play against the Buffalo Sabres, and his dying grandmother was going to make the trek from Toronto to watch her grandson play for maybe one of the last times of her life. Keenan, in a move that made Brett Hull turn on him for good, made Hawerchuk a healthy scratch for the game, citing his recent poor play. This actually served as a catalyst to get the captaincy stripped from Hull's jersey and given to Shane Corson. According to the Hartford Courant in 1995, Keenan insisted it wasn't personal. Hull called bullshit on that and confronted Keenan about it as only Hull could, with furious anger. Hull recently told the Post-Dispatch's Dan Caesar the story. He was such a tyrant, Hull says. There's things you do and things you don't do, end quote. Hull talks about losing his team captaincy over the matter. I snapped on Mike Keenan, and that's when he took my C away, Hull says. You can take it. That's the lowest thing I've ever seen. If that's what it means, then they can have it, end quote. Wow. To think Hawerchuk's grandmother was the start of the end for Brett Hull in St. Louis. This happened in October 1995, though, and Hawerchuk would remain with the team and playing fairly regularly until March 1996, when he was traded to Philadelphia for Craig McTavish.
Wow is right. In that short clip, we heard about a record that Dale Hawerchuk set in becoming the first player under the age of 31 to play 1,000 games, which just goes back to, again, his durability in terms of being a superstar. He was a low-maintenance superstar, and we keep hearing that over and over and over again from various sources throughout his career, and that he really required no special treatment. He never asked for it, never wanted it. Not only that, but he also took care of himself really, really well. He understood the intricacies of the game in terms of nutrition and certainly keeping himself, you know, well-rested and making sure that he was fit all the time, and that goes to show you that his durability in terms of the results of those things are that Dale Hawerchuk played a lot of games before he turned 31. So congratulations on that record, Dale Hawerchuk, because that is phenomenal. But to hear the story of Mike Keenan and how Brett Hall and Mike Keenan clashed over Dale Hawerchuk being scratched in a game where his grandmother was coming to see him really sort of personifies the respect that Dale Hawerchuk commanded from his fellow teammates. I know a lot of players loved him for the fact that he always was there for his teammates. He always made sure that people felt at home. It's one of those things that I think that Dale Hawerchuk maybe gets undervalued for a lot more, in that he was an excellent leader that had the command of the dressing room in terms of the respect of the players that he played with. So that's great to see. As noted, the trade to the Philadelphia Flyers that came in 1996 seemed to revitalize Dale Hawerchuk's career. Hawerchuk would join a Philadelphia Flyers team that boasted Eric Lindros and the Legion of Doom line that legitimately was taking control of the NHL. That line of LeClaire, Brind'Amour, and Lindros seemed to be as dominant as they come, but Dale Hawerchuk gave them a solid second-line center that could score goals and play a little defense. His role in the 1996 NHL playoffs against the Tampa Bay Lightning was absolutely magnificent, and we do have a couple of highlights from that series as Dale Hawerchuk was all over the score sheet against the Lightning.
Here's Hawerchuk. Flips it up to the side. LeClaire trying to stuff it in. He scores! Hawerchuk! Line was out there for about 15 seconds and Hawerchuk clicks.
That's about all it was too, Paul. The big line needed leadership and was a delayed penalty coming on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Hawerchuk found the room. There you see the penalty. There you see the goal.
Philadelphia would go on to win 7-3 in Game 1 over the Tampa Bay Lightning on the strength of that Hawerchuk goal to open the scoring, but he wasn't done there, as in Game 2, he would score from his normal spot on the power play with the Flyers, playing the right point as he unleashed an absolute cannon of a drive against the Lightning.
Lots of traffic there in front of Pupa. Lindros tried to work it down low. Zaminer got a piece of it, but here's LeClaire. LeClaire tried to drop it back for Lindros. Zaminer broke it up. Hawerchuk scores! What a shot!
Tampa Bay would go on to win 2-1 in overtime off of Brian Bellow's goal. That even the series at 1-1 at that point. But Dale Hawerchuk wasn't done there, as he'll score a big goal, an insurance marker, in Game 4 in this series.
Around for Petit. Gavey was hit there. Hawerchuk tipped it, scores! Dale Hawerchuk with a beautiful tip. And it's 3-1 Flyers.
Oh, that's what hitting will do for you.
The Flyers would go on to win 4-2 in that series against Tampa Bay before running into an upstart Florida team who beat them 4-2 on the route to the Stanley Cup Final, where they eventually lost to the Colorado Avalanche in 1996. Hawerchuk would return to the Flyers in 1997, where he helped the team advance to the Stanley Cup Final in the 1997 Stanley Cup playoffs for the first time since 1987. Unfortunately, they ran into the juggernaut known as the Detroit Red Wings that year, and Detroit swept the Flyers in the final to win their first Stanley Cup since 1955. Hawerchuk, in a surprise move, would retire from the NHL at the age of 33 following that series. Hawerchuk would be voted into the Hockey Hall of Fame in 2001 on his second year of eligibility, and it's an honor that he never took for granted. He was also voted into the Manitoba Hockey Hall of Fame in 2013, and we do have a recording of him speaking about the honor at that ceremony.
It's really special. I mean, my wife's from here, my firstborn is born here in Winnipeg, and he only spent a year here, but you know what? That kid is so Manitoban, he can talk to anybody. Like, it's unbelievable. And that's the true spirit. It's the spirit of Manitobans, and it's special that way.
Yeah, you mentioned too when you were up at the podium that's what you love about the pure sport that was represented here tonight. Talk a little bit about that. Why do you think Manitoba is different that way?
Maybe because there's less people and like. I think, you know, you talk about the pure athletes in towns. They were the best hockey players, the best baseball players, football players, you know. And I wanted to play every sport, too. Like, and you know what? At the end of the day, when you look at these great hockey players or great baseball players, they were usually the best athletes, you know. And, you know, you look at a guy like Wayne Gretzky. He was a great ball player as well, you know. And sometimes when I scout now, I look for kids who I think are more. If I'm close with a kid, I'll go with the more athletic one, or sometimes a kid that has more will and skill.
Yeah, right.
But if he's got athleticism, you know, I'm in his corner.
You mentioned scouting. Of course, you're coaching in Barrie, Ontario, and you made the big news out here when Mark Scheifele, of course, was drafted and all that. What do you pass on from your playing experience? What do you pass on to your athletes? What's most important to you?
There's a lot of things that go into it, and there's like I tell you want to make the NHL, there's a big package you got to have, and the closer you are to having all the elements of that package, the better chance you have to make it. And it's a work in progress all the time. Like, you know what, it just doesn't happen overnight for some guys, and the route is always different for everybody. But if you have the passion, you have the belief, and you'll put the time in, and the true honest work ethic, whatever you want to call it, you have a shot.
Yeah.
You know, because I've seen a lot of guys, and I see it even in my 15-year-old boy now. At 12, I'd say, I don't think he's got a shot to play. At 15, I'm like, I could have been wrong at 12.
Yeah.
So that's what, you know, humanity is that strong, and sometimes we got to give our athletes and kids more credit and let them pursue their dreams as long as they can.
Sure. Now, there are, of the percentage of kids that play, obviously we know the percentage is small, that go on to the sort of the big leagues and play in the NHL. What would you say to kids and parents? Why is it worth it to play anyway, even if you're not going to make it all the way?
Well, number one, I always say it's, we all started this game because it's fun, right? We wanted to score a goal. It's like, I used to hate coaches that always tell me, well, you got to play defense, 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 defense. Well, I signed up because I want to score goals, so it's fun, right? But I understand the game. You keep it out of your net, and you get it in their net, and the more times you get it in their net, you win the game. So it's got to be fun, you know? And as along the way, you're having fun, and then you want to get better at it. And then now the competition comes, and those just stoke fires within people, and then now you're working in a team environment. And if you want to work in the workforce in this world today, you have to learn how to work in a team environment. No different than you guys at your station, right? If you're not good at it, you're probably not going to last long. And it's an important part, for a hockey team and in society.
Yeah. And was that competitiveness fun for you?
Oh yeah, like I said about Thomas Dean and I. Yeah. You know what? We wanted it. If he was on the first power play unit that night and I was on the second, we wanted to outdo. And if we were doing that and they were doing that to us, and that means we were scoring a lot and we were going to win the hockey game, right?
Yeah.
And that was a good thing. But, you know, when we got together, we really enjoyed playing together. And so it was great to see him.
Great. Well, Dale, what an honor to meet you and to chat with you. And just you're inspiring to all of our Manitoba young athletes that never know what might come someday.
You never know. I mean, I was just one of the lucky ones that got plucked off the street hockey team. And here I am today.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I want to thank the Manitoba Hockey Hall of Fame for allowing us to use that clip, and as well, Michelle Coop for doing that interview with Dale Hawerchuk. From that clip, we'll turn to a Sportsnet clip that examines his role as the head coach of the Barrie Colts and the player that we drafted here in Winnipeg in 2011 when the second version of the Jets came back, another centerman by the name of Mark Scheifele, and the unique bond that Mark Scheifele and Dale Hawerchuk have when it comes to the city of Winnipeg. Here's Sportsnet's look at how Dale Hawerchuk's experience as a Winnipeg Jet helped Mark Scheifele become the Jet that we know today.
Scheifele shoots, scores! Mark Scheifele steals the puck and scores the goal.
Well, the first time I met him, he was trying to convince me to come to Barrie. I was just traded from Saginaw. Dale pretty much single-handedly talking me into coming to Barrie just because the way he was, the You know, the influence he had, you look at his career and you see what he did, it made me pretty excited to go to Barry, and then spent 3 years with him and probably learned something new from him every single day. So that was pretty special to have him on my side.
Good stick, get on it, right there, go, jump! Two!
When Mark first came, of course, he was only 17, so everybody questioned his skating. You know, they questioned my skating when I was young, too. And when you have the right attitude, you're going to push through. And as you put the work in and as you mature and get older, you know, the skating comes with it. Now he's probably one of the fastest guys in the National Hockey League.
He loves talking hockey. He loves to teach the game. And that's something that is the biggest thing about him. He loves the game and he loves to teach it.
They want to line up, okay, and just chip it out, all right? We got to make sure we're going to get a lot of chances.
That's why he loves being in Barrie so much. You know, he gets new kids in each and every year, and he gets a chance to be able to teach them.
There's one thing about hockey players, you know, they're not all the same. They're different, and some of their strengths you definitely want to really exploit, and their weaknesses you want to get to a point where it's not going to affect the best part of their game.
He was a god here. Obviously his stats, speak for themselves.
Knocked down by Howard Chuck, Dance, the Chuck scores!
You actually meet people that knew him and rave about him. That's something that definitely makes it even more special.
Mark's, one of the brightest stars coming up.
He scores! That's a hat-trick for Scheifele, the first of his career.
Scheifele still on it, comes off the boards with the puck, in front, backhand, scores! Mark Scheifele gives the Jets the lead. Well, we talked about this kid. He's the real deal.
The thing I love about Mark, though, he comes to the rink every day with a smile. He loves the game. He loves the practice. He loves the working out. He just loves being at the rink. He's almost like a rink rat. And that's one thing you can't really teach. You either have the passion or you don't. And he certainly has that. And, it's starting, all the hard work through his passion is starting to pay off.
Scheifele shoots. He scores.
We heard Dale Hawerchuk off the top talking to James Duthie in his interview about some of the greatest hockey he's ever seen, and he included the 87 Rendezvous series, which replaced the All-Star game in 1987. Basically, it was the NHL All-Stars against a Russian team that was a Russian All-Star team. In that game, there were a pile of great players that played, obviously, a ton of great opportunities for the NHL to really showcase itself against some of the best international players that the Russians could send over, the Soviets could send over at that point. But Dale Hawerchuk had an impact in that game as well. He actually was in on one of the big goals that the NHL team scored in the Rendezvous series. Here is the highlight of Dale Hawerchuk scoring, or at least assisting on a goal, at Rendezvous 87.
Back to live action, Hawerchuk for the NHL. In front is Dineen, he shoots and scores, set up by Poulin. Chuck and Poulin set up Dineen. The NHL leads it 3-2. He was jammed on that first chance can a minute ago, but he wasn't jammed on that one. Dave Poulin passes this right onto Kevin Dineen's tape. Hawerchuk along the boards, back into the corner to Poulin. And Dineen is jockeying for a position.
Jets fans were lucky enough to see Dale Hawerchuk on the ice once more, although not in his familiar Winnipeg Arena or the Bell MTS Center. Instead, we got to see Dale Hawerchuk take the ice once more out at Investors Group Field for the Heritage Classic alumni game. The Jets took on the Oilers in terms of all the old stars being out on the ice, and Dale Hawerchuk was one of those stars that showed up and played incredibly well. Dale even made fans cheer loudly as he scored a goal on that day while skating on a line with Timu Salani.
Works today because they had lots of forwards and very few defensemen.
Go left, go left, left.
I mean, that's still beautiful to watch, right? Salani in that skating stride. And a Salani to Hawerchuk goal. Short side on Bill Ranford. Hawerchuk always known for that incredible wrist shot, snapshot. And spotted just a little opening right there. Buries it.
While that may have been Dale Hawerchuk's last goal in Winnipeg Jets colors, the last goal that he did score as an NHL member of the Winnipeg Jets came on April 8th, 1990. It was in the Game 3 of the Smythe Division semifinal. It was a third-period game-winning goal that gave the Jets a 2-1 victory over the Edmonton Oilers for a 2-1 series lead. Here's the highlight of that goal with commentary from Dale Hawerchuk.
In the corner, Simpson has it. Simpson is checked. Gets it again. Tries to clear. Knocked down by Hawerchuk. Stands the shot. Score!
It's just kind of an innocent-looking play. A bit of a forecheck on, and then they tried to dump the puck out, and I just happened to pick it off my glove and skated to the slot and got a pretty good wrist shot, and it dipped a bit and went in the net.
Did it hit the defenseman's stick of the Edmonton Oilers? It seemed to.
No, it was rolling. I think that the ice was a little chippy all night, and the pucks were rolling and bouncing, and as I shot, it was sort of flipping and caused it to dip a little bit.
Hearing those highlights are certainly fond memories for Jets fans. Dale Hawerchuk, unfortunately, was unable to participate in the most recent Heritage Classic in Regina, Saskatchewan against the Calgary Flames due to his ongoing battle with stomach cancer. The media caught up with Jets owner Mark Chipman to see exactly what was going on at that time on October 25th, 2019, to see if the Jets owner had any further good news about Dale Hawerchuk.
I've spoken to Dale. I spoke to him last week. He seems to be doing okay. He's really appreciative for... You know, everybody that's been reaching out to him, he's in a battle and he knows it. But, I think Lanny's remarks were similar to what others have offered to him. He knows how to battle and he's in a big one right now. But by talking to him and hearing his voice, sounds very much like he's up to it.
All alumni are obviously special to your organization. But Dale, there's always been that relationship, even with the Barry pipeline and Mark Scheifele, yeah. Your first pick.
Yeah, Dale Hawerchuk is royalty in the history of the Winnipeg Jets. He put that team on the map, and he's continued to be an incredible alumnus for us in so many respects, and we're very, very proud to have him as a part of our group. And, you know, I'm praying for him and thinking about him every day, and I'm looking forward to having him back in the building as soon as he returns to health.
While there was joy for a short period of time as Dale Hawerchuk did beat stomach cancer, there was a recurrence of the cancer, unfortunately, and Dale went back to the hospital. As we now know, Dale lost his battle with the cancer in terms of not being able to beat it for a second time, and we lost Dale Hawerchuk at the age of 57. It's a horrendous, horrible disease. I really wish we could find a cure for cancer, and certainly losing a guy like Dale Hawerchuk, losing an icon to this city like Dale Hawerchuk, is very difficult to deal with for any sports fan, any sort of hockey fan who followed the Jets in the 1980s and certainly beyond that. In saying that, I'm going to replay Ron McLean's words from Sportsnet on Tuesday, where he draws attention to the work that Dale Hawerchuk did in the Canada Cup Series in 1987, and certainly he was a big part there, as well as obviously being a little bit more remorseful at the end towards Dale's wife and children, and certainly friends and family and co-workers and franchisees in the Barry Colts setup. All of these people who are affected. Here is Ron McLean on Tuesday on Sportsnet.
Obviously what he did for Winnipeg Jets, he's a Philadelphia Flyer, he's a Hall of Famer, he was the youngest to hit 1,000 games at the age of 31, 500 goals, 1,000 points, but Canada Cup. Canada was in tough. They were down 3-0 in the deciding game in 1987. Maybe the greatest hockey ever played. Not only did he get it to 5-4, when it was 5-5, he spun his magic. Enjoy.
That's Hawerchuk and Sutter with it. To Hawerchuk. Shoots. Neil Nikoff the save. Hawerchuk back to the net. Stuffs it in front. Shoots. He scores! Dale Hawerchuk! Hawerchuk will draw the assignment against Becca. Hawerchuk wins it in. Here's Lemieux poking at the center. Lemieux ahead to Gretzky. Has Murphy with him on a 2-on-1 to Lemieux. And on goal, he shoots, he scores! Lemieux with 1:26 remaining.
to his wife, Crystal, to Howie Campbell and the Barry Colts, to the Royal Victoria Regional Hospital up in Barry. You were incredible. It's too many names to mention. I just think of everybody who loved Dale Hawerchuk. His nickname, Ducky, he got it in junior when he won the Memorial Cups with the Cornwall Royals. They called him Ducky, if you can believe it, because he skated kind of funny. And then Scott O'Neill took that to Winnipeg with the Jets. But Dale, God love you. You never, Ducky, it makes sense because you never ducked anything. You didn't duck a duty. You didn't duck a challenge. You didn't duck out on your family or your friends or your horses. You were endlessly calm above the water, especially when it was frozen.
The Hockey Show, on behalf of 101.5 UMFM, sends its heartfelt condolences to Dale Hawerchuk's family, wife Crystal, sons Eric and Ben, and daughter Alexis. We lost a great icon for this city, but they lost their husband and their dad. I really, really wish that the hurt would go away, and certainly it'll be a long time before Dale Hawerchuk will be forgotten in this city or by anybody else who was even remotely touched by his life. I'm going to leave you with a song today written by Warren Zevon. You may know Warren Zevon as the writer of Werewolves in London when he was back in his little bit of a crazier day. Warren Zevon was a Chicago singer-songwriter, as you may know. He wrote his final album, The Wind, after being diagnosed with lung cancer. The final song on that album is called Keep Me in Your Heart, and it's Warren Zevon's final farewell. As you listen to Warren Zevon's song, I'm reminded by one line from the movie The Sandlot, actually, spoken by Art LaFleur, who played Babe Ruth. He said, quote, "Remember, kid, there's heroes and there's legends. Heroes get remembered, but legends never die. Follow your heart, kid, and you can never go wrong." That's the memory that I want to have of Dale Hawerchuk, and I hope that you do too. Rest in eternal peace, Dale Hawerchuk. You'll always be a legend in this city.
Shadows are falling and I'm running out of breath. Keep me in your heart for a while. If I leave you, it doesn't mean I love you any less. Keep me in your heart for a while. When you get up in the morning and you see that crazy sun, keep me in your heart for a while. There's a train leaving nightly called when all is said and done. Keep me in your heart for a while. Shine.